Hello and welcome to your free therapy session. My name is Violet.
And my name is Halle, and this is Therapy Hour.
Because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples.
This week, there is a little change of plans. I know we said that we were going to do confrontation, but actually today we'll be talking about the idea of being alone versus being lonely. And funnily enough, I heard this little like distinction or term or whatever from an ex of mine. And honestly, when he said it, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I thought it was very interesting, and I couldn't, like, I don't think I had ever considered it beforehand, but I'm interested to know, what do you think the difference is between being lonely and being alone?
I think that honestly there's quite a big distinction for me. I feel like I can be alone, like physically alone in a space, and not feel lonely. And I think that I find myself in that situation a lot. And usually that's just correlated to the fact that I feel very satisfied in my life. You know, I'm not having those general feelings of loneliness. It's kind of like I'm alone right now, but I feel like if I wanted to be with other people, I could be. And I feel like loneliness for me is kind of the absence of that feeling. So it's kind of, it comes with spending time alone because I have to and not because I actually want to, which sometimes I really do want to be alone. Like that's, you know, very normal for me. But I've also experienced loneliness when I'm with other people, and I think that that's quite common for me as well. And kind of feeling like my connections or my conversations with people aren't meaningful or don't have like substance. And I think that's a sensation that makes me feel really lonely, even though I am technically with surrounded with other people.
Is it in that moment that you'll feel lonely? Like you're in this midst of a connection or a conversation, or I guess lack thereof connection, and that feeling of loneliness comes like upon you?
Yeah, definitely. And then also I think it kind of follows me after the fact as well, of just like a general sense of like, that had no substance, that had no meaning, like that feels lonely.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah,
I can understand that.
Yeah, that does that resonate with you, those like kind of distinctions that I made?
Well, it's interesting because I have a very different concept of what being alone is to me, because for me the idea of being alone is really for me being there for myself and relying on myself. And I think of the, I think in the past and even now, I think a lot of this idea of being alone, I think really connected to not being in a romantic relationship.
Okay.
And then I think a lot further from romantic relationships, just like how I think I prided myself in the past, you know, good chunk of my life into being like, oh, I can, I'm really independent and I can really be self-sufficient. And so I feel a lot of power in that kind of more, I don't know, conceptual idea of being alone. But I do agree with your statement of the idea of being alone when you're choosing to be alone feels not lonely. It's like, oh, I'm just by myself. But I also take it as this idea of being very dependent on myself. And I think only recently in my life I've been able to depend on other people, and that makes this idea of being alone not as strong anymore, which I think kind of infringes on some form of identity for me. But that's kind of my concept of being alone. And I think it's more of like, I'm alone in this world.
So, but that in and of itself was not a lonely experience for you.
No, but I think it can be. And I think loneliness is an extremely painful feeling to me. I think being alone to me is this kind of state of mind or state of presence, while loneliness is this emotional feeling I'll have. And I think it's, you know, lack of connection when I'm like desiring it the most. Usually I feel very similarly in the idea that when I don't feel like my connections are strong, I feel very lonely. And I also think that nowadays loneliness is also really attached to when it's almost like an immediate reaction to when I leave a social gathering, a really good one as well. So I feel like when I'm in this, you know, let's say like a big party or something like that, and I feel really like amped up and I'm seeing all these people and talking to everyone, and it like gives me a lot of energy because, as we know, I am an extrovert. So it's kind of linked to my extroversion, I guess. But when I leave those really like highly social situations, I get home and I'm by myself for the first time and I feel extremely lonely. It feels like it just compounds into one of like, you have no one, you are such a lonely person. But I think it's because it goes from one extreme to another, and I feel so happy in that extreme of like so many people, that then pulling myself out of it and putting myself by myself, then that makes me feel very lonely.
That's really interesting.
Which I'm gonna guess that you don't have those feelings.
I like, you know, can leave a very fun big function and then I'm alone, and then I'm like, whew, nice, I get to wind down, I'm all by myself, isn't this nice? I can like reminisce about like earlier on in the day or whatever. But yeah, I feel like as an introvert, being alone is hardly a lonely feeling for me. And it's the feeling of not being able to resonate or connect with the people around me, or feeling like I'm in a group and sort of being overlooked sometimes. And I think even that can be like related to my introversion as well, because I'm not usually like going to be like taking up the most like attention in the room. And I think sometimes that makes me insecure that I'm being overlooked in like big group settings. And so I feel like I'm more likely to feel lonely in that big party situation that like you're talking about than I am to feel that way like after the fact.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, what opposites.
Wow, opposites attract, am I right?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, introversion and extroversion have to do in some concept. It's interesting that both these kind of measures of personality are still related to loneliness, but in, like, the most opposite ways, it seems like. And I do think that there's a lot to be said about different personality types. I think a lot of like anxiety can really get in the way as well in terms of your loneliness and how you feel lonely. But I also think that it's very interesting that we're talking about being lonely right now, because Vancouver, out of the cities around the world, has always ranked pretty high on the list of like one of the most loneliest cities. Do you think that that's true? Is that what your experience is here?
Yeah, I actually wrote an entire essay about this past winter.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence we're talking about this right now.
Because I had heard that Vancouver was ranked the loneliest city in Canada. And I really wanted to like explore that idea, because I have like in general very limited experience living anywhere other than Vancouver and like Pennsylvania, where I grew up. And I feel like growing up in a place is a very different thing as well. And so I was just like so curious about what this idea is that can make a city lonely. Like, what is it? Is it the people? Is it the geography? Is it the like infrastructure? Like, what? How? You know? And like, Vancouver is like a smaller city, but it's not like a tiny town, you know, like it's not like you could walk down the street and like not see people for the most part, like most streets in Vancouver, I would say. But all of that being said, I feel like my main conclusions within that essay was that I kind of attributed it to the general social culture in Vancouver, and specifically the flakiness and also kind of like an exclusiveness that people will have in Vancouver as well. And so like then within that, it's kind of like you think about flakiness and you think like, okay, well, what does the like public transit look like in Vancouver? It takes a really long time to get from one part of the city to the other using the buses. I love the bus system. I'm not trying to hate on the bus system here.
We support it.
You know, I almost got a 99 Beeline tattoo. I'm like a big fan. But I do also recognize that other cities, especially when you look within Canada, has better public transportation.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can be a barrier. It's also a very expensive city.
Absolutely.
And the city shuts down quite early.
Yeah.
And then also, like, a big part of the culture here is obviously, like, the outdoors culture, mm-hmm. which I think can be kind of inaccessible for, like, price reasons or, like, transportation, like, all of these things. And that's where I see a lot of people connecting here is, like, let's go surfing, let's go skiing, like, let's go on this hike all together.
Yeah.
And I think that that is not always the most inclusive thing to do.
Definitely not.
And then I was kind of reflecting on my own time in Vancouver and thinking about, like, I would almost relate it to, like, what I've heard about hazing.
Okay.
But hear me out.
All right. So excited to hear
that. Got a reason. So, like, if you move to Vancouver and you have to kind of, like, work really hard to fight for, you know, the friends and the group that you have, and you right. find a solid space in that,
mm-hmm.
you start to kind of become protective over that group. And you think, like, oh, we have a good situation going here. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the people I'm surrounded with. I worked really hard to, you know, enter into this social scene. And then I have seen in myself, and I've also seen in, like, other people in my group have a little bit of, like, their guard up with new people coming in because there's kind of this attitude of maybe it's like, oh, we don't want to mess up the group dynamic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just find that people aren't really the most warm and welcoming here and open to new people. And I think I've been very lucky, you know, coming in as an international student to UBC, meeting a lot of other international folks at Jumpstart and kind of starting the social ball rolling there. So I feel like I haven't really had that, like, Vancouver loneliness kind of experience myself, but I definitely see it. And I am fearful that I may even contribute to it sometimes.
I think that it's interesting that you bring up the flakiness part, because I think every big city is going to kind of bring out this flakiness personality type of people, because when you think about how big cities have more people, there is usually public transportation, or at least it's bigger, so it's harder to get places, and also there's a lot of things going on, and so sometimes people will choose to do other things. Because I've heard this, you know, back, you know, I'm from LA, people always talk about people in LA being the most flaky people in the entire world. All my friends that live in New York say the same thing about New York. I'm sure that the people in other big cities will say the same thing. And I do think that that's something that does happen in Vancouver. But I also think it's just kind of, I don't know, I kind of expected it coming into this city. But I do think that must contribute to it. And I think the big thing that you're talking about with outdoor connection and all that, like, it's not an inclusive space at any level. And I do think this idea of people being protective over their group is something that's really interesting, because I do think I feel that way sometimes. Like, I think that there have been times, maybe I've said it jokingly, but maybe it has kind of, you know, impeded
itself.
Because, like, I feel similar to you, where, well, I don't feel similar in the way that when I first got to Vancouver, I was very lonely. And then I got better over the years, and I think I started spreading my wings a little bit. But there were always these really, it felt like these difficult obstacles sometimes with certain groups where I felt like I had to prove myself, or it was like a little stint in the road where I'd be like, oh, okay, I wanted to go for this group, but they're a bit standoffish. I think that's my biggest thing with Vancouver is that people feel really standoffish sometimes, unless you, and I feel like the position I put myself in a lot of the times is just being really loud and asking someone a lot of questions until they break down and then finally want to be my friend. Because I do think that I've found a lot of really great community here in Vancouver, in small pockets of the city. And I think it exists, but it is interesting because so many people have the same thing to say about Vancouver. It's really clicky. It's nobody wants to hang out, or they always want to just hang out with the same people. And, like, I know from the people that I've met that are, like, born and raised in Vancouver, the people that I've met are like that, and the people that have been born and raised here will talk about that a lot. Of like, oh yeah, you know, this group of people who knew each other for 10 years, like they're still friends and they don't let anyone into their group. And that is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I can't relate to that at all.
I was going to say, I don't even know who I was friends with 10 years ago. Who was that girl?
Yeah, that is a really interesting phenomenon. And I do kind of look around at the people I'm closest with here, and not a lot of them are Vancouver natives.
Nope.
Yeah. Like really they, not. A lot of them are like, you know, just international students like me or...
from different provinces.
Yeah, different provinces. And like, I don't think that that is a coincidence. I think in general, the Vancouver friends that I have, the people who were born and raised here are... yeah, I think that they're just like further and farther and further in between. And I think that's because there is a general culture specifically to like people from Vancouver where they're not super interested in getting to know like other people, I guess, or like changing up their friend groups too much.
Yeah. And then I was just thinking as you were talking to the note that you had about how everything closes so early here. Mm-hmm. So then that kind of pushes people to be spending time with their groups of people, probably at their houses or parks.
Yeah.
That was a lot of the hangout time I had was in parks around Vancouver. And I think, again, that fosters this idea of like, we're a group.
Mm-hmm.
We see each other every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people we hang out with. And it's not going to be anyone else. There's not like all these events to be going to all the time. And even the events that do happen in Vancouver, I think there's certain events for very specific type of people in Vancouver. Like I am not going downtown on a Friday night.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who are. And I don't think I would ever be able to effectively be a part of that group because that's just not something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So it's very odd.
Yeah.
Vancouver's a silly, silly place and a lonely place for that. Because then that's the thing is like someone comes here and they don't go to university. Maybe they're just working here.
Yeah.
And they can't afford to go skiing or go to Tofino or whatever. And everybody has these groups already like laid out for them. And then now you're kind of stuck on whatever night of the week and you don't really have a community here for you. And that is terrible.
Yeah. And, you know, you have like you have to be able to afford to live in this city where the rent is increasingly unaffordable. So you're probably like spending your time working like extra hours. That doesn't leave a lot of time to go out there and like form strong bonds with other people in your community. It just doesn't.
No.
Yeah.
Well, this is a sad and lonely place, apparently, but not at therapy hour. At therapy hour, we are very open and community-oriented.
We will be your friends.
We'll be your friends. But we're going to take a quick little break and listen to a song that's very near and dear to my heart. It's called Loner by Kelly Uchis. I've listened to this song in some of my loneliest times. And when we come back, we'll be diving into our research portion. You won't want to miss this.
I don't wanna be a cigarette. I don't wanna be an ashtray. I don't wanna be a doormat. Don't wanna be ignored. All of a sudden you're not into me. And maybe it's not deliberate. And I know you never asked me. I just gotta put it out there. I don't put myself out there. Usually I stay tucked away. Cause I was a loner until I met you. And I let you in after all the persuasion. Mind games, manipulations. So I'd rather be a loner. Yeah, I'd rather be a loner. Toss me, step on me.
To live music performed by local stars like Addie Wolf, Gleisha, Seikani, Athena's Moon, Lorcay's Dream, and other amazing artists. Dance to summery sets by DJ Natsu, Business Bacha, Javi with a J, Iha, and more. Find us in a colorful tent on the lot beside the James Black Gallery from August 18th to the 21st, and over Zoom on August 24th for our live stream showcase. There's lots of seating in the front yard, backyard, and under our tent. We'll be barbecuing it up on Saturday. Festival passes come with one free Kickstarter juice from the juice truck. Sliding scale passes are set aside for Two-Spirit, Queer, Trans, BIPOC, and low-income folks. Your pass purchase also supports our free trauma-informed virtual workshop for sexual assault domestic violence survivors. More info can be found at linktree.com/sound_therapy.wave, linktr.ee/sound_therapy.wav.
And we're back. You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the unceded lands of the Musqueam peoples. I understand that you've done some research on loneliness for us today, Ale.
How did you know that? It was supposed to be a secret.
Oh, well, I took a little peek at the script, and it looks like you've got some goodies for us.
I do have some goodies. Well, I wanted to start off with what the psychological definition of loneliness is, because there's a lot of different ones that fly around, but I thought that this one was most pertinent to kind of what we talked about, and I think you said this really well when you described loneliness to you, and what a lot of papers say is that loneliness is considered to be the absence of the need to belong, or like the absence of belonging in a time of needing to belong.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So it's not like the absence of needing to belong, because that would just mean you don't want to, you just want to be a loner.
Right. You just want to be alone.
But yeah, we've talked a lot on this podcast about the need to belong. I feel like it's come up in a lot of different sections, and how your body and your mind and your brain have a lot of mechanisms in place so that you can fit into a social group, and also to help alert you when you're not fitting into a social group. And loneliness is definitely one of them. Same with rejection, and same with what we were talking about with FOMO. And we know that loneliness is something we need to discuss, because it's a risk factor for a lot of mental health disorders. And like this paper that I was reading was talking about how it's a public health issue now because people are reporting being lonelier, and that's affecting people's mental health. And I do, before we kind of jump in, because I do really want to talk about the stats, because I think that they are very interesting. I want to add that there's really not that much positive research in psychology about the concept of being alone. And I think you've done a really good job about talking on this podcast about how being alone is really something that you treasure and something that's really healthy for you. And it's honestly, in my opinion, very unfortunate that psychology doesn't follow that, because I think in psychological terms, we really think about how bonding and being connected are very, very important things. But I think we've talked a little bit how you can feel connected to people, and also the being alone, whether it's, you know, physically or mentally or whatever the way you want to think about it, that can still exist and it can be good for some people.
And in fact, I enjoy being alone more because I feel like satiated in the connections that I have been able to make.
Yeah, I get really frustrated with the way that some of these research, like especially the way these scales work for loneliness too. Some of them just ask like, oh, you know, how often do you spend a night alone? And it's like, well, maybe someone does spend their nights alone and they're still connected to people. So I just wanted to put that out there before we get into it.
Yeah.
However, loneliness, crazy things.
Tell me about it.
So one thing, which is something that I remember learning in one of my classes, is that the younger that you, once you pass adolescence, so once you enter into teenager zone, the younger people are, the more lonely they're likely to feel. So compared to middle-aged people, young people, so someone in their 20s is going to feel on average more lonely than someone in their like 40s or 50s. And then someone in their 40s or 50s is going to feel a bit more lonely than somebody that's in their elderly state, which is interesting because I always would think about it opposite.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you're older, maybe you don't see as many of your friends anymore. Yeah. Maybe you moved away from your friends, or, you know, if you're in an elderly state, you know, maybe some of your friends have passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of a classic thing to like look over at like an old person, like eating alone at a restaurant and be like, oh, they look so lonely.
Do you have any idea of why you think older people are not as lonely?
Maybe they've become bitter of the world and they're like, I don't like these people walking around. So, but then when you're younger, you, well, first of all, if you're really young, like you're a child, just throwing ideas at
you. No, go on.
If you're a child, you're obviously still quite codependent.
Yeah.
So being alone is kind of like overwhelming of like, oh no, can I really meet my needs? I'm all by myself.
Yes.
But then you get a little bit older and then you're like, I can meet my needs, but I'd like to hang out with some friends, please. Is that accurate?
Kind of.
Okay.
The reason I asked you is because, you know, we don't really actually know the answer.
Oh, okay.
Because these findings are correlational. Mm. Like, we can't really prove that the older you get, the more lonely you get.
Okay.
But a lot of, there's a lot of different theories. One of them is that it's thought to be that when you're a younger person, it's more socially acceptable to admit that you're lonely than if you're an older person.
Interesting.
Like, I think the idea is that younger people will talk about loneliness more, and it's obviously they're in a state of their life where they're talking about social connection and feeling bonded to one another. So that's a really big thing. And then also the idea is that another idea is that when you get older, you find and solidify relationships in your life, and you also solidify a relationship with yourself where you no longer are feeling, you know, body and image insecurity goes down as you get older. So the idea is here, maybe you're being more comfortable with yourself and you're more likely to be alone and not feel lonely.
Insecure about that. That's great. We have so much to look forward to.
I can't wait until I'm older and I don't have to constantly feel lonely and sad.
Feel lonely, feel insecure about my body, be sure about who I am. This sounds great.
Sounds great.
Can we skip to that part?
And then the other big statistic is that men tend to report being more lonelier than women. Does that make sense for you?
That makes sense for me.
Okay.
Personally, because at least from what I've observed, I feel like a lot of men, at least who are largely friends with mostly other men, maybe aren't, like, kind of circling back to what I was saying about having, like, meaningful connection with others.
Yeah.
It's not that men can't meaningfully connect with each other, but I've spoken to a lot of my male friends about how they don't speak to their other male friends about issues going on with their life. And like, I think when you're doing that and you're existing in that way with your relationships, it's lonely to like feel like you have to go through things by yourself.
Yeah.
So that would be my prediction for that.
And I, you know, again, it's a debated topic, but I think that when I read the statistic, that made a lot of sense to me, that it tends to be that women, as they are studied in psychology, tend to have stronger emotional relationships. They have better support systems. They have people that they can talk to. And men, in the context of these studies, tend to not have that. The other reason that a lot of researchers, at least the researchers in this article, thought that men came out to have more or have more loneliness than women was that they talked about how when in these types of studies where they send out surveys, men are like more likely to talk about their loneliness than they would if they were out in the world. So it's like higher like reported, because women may talk about it a lot more amongst their friends and they'll get a survey and maybe they'll talk about it, or maybe that day or whatever, they just won't tick off that box to say that they feel lonely. Whereas men, because they don't have those social connections and they may not be able to admit that to their friends, these surveys that are anonymous, they tend to like report more that they're lonely.
That's really interesting.
Which I thought was fascinating, that this was like the way, because they did another, they compared this study, that this was an online anonymous survey, and they also did a study similar to this, but the people that came in were in person, and men didn't report being more lonely then. Women reported being more lonely.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so we also think that was also a very cool fact. And then the last one is that people who are living in individualist cultures tend to report more loneliness than collectivist cultures. I've said on this podcast that I don't like these terms very much, but for the gist of this episode, I feel like we kind of know the idea of like individualist cultures are cultures that kind of, you know, bring up the individual. You depend on yourself and you need to make yourself worth and whatever, and you don't really, you know, depend on the people around you. Whereas in collectivist countries, you have stronger family bonds, stronger friend bonds, and all that kind of makes sense. But the reason that they put this in the article was that they said that this is usually a factor that accentuates loneliness. So if you have a young man in an individualist country, that man will be lonelier than a young man in a collectivist country.
Okay.
But it's a pretty small difference when it comes down to it.
Gotcha.
And the main thing is, and hopefully this is some good news, is that loneliness is universal. Everyone feels it. We can't really stop it. Everyone around the world feels it in a very, very different way.
Right. Yeah, and I think even if you go through periods of time where you're not really feeling lonely, as much as you would love to like hold on to that feeling and know, you know, oh, I won't be lonely forever, I think when you're in it, it's hard to feel like you'll ever not be lonely.
Yeah, and I feel like it doesn't always really help to know that other people feel lonely, but I think that it's always a nice thing to add in there so you can remind yourself that the way you feel right now, everyone else in the world has felt at some point. And so, you know, there's a lot of research in the last few years that have come up about loneliness because it's becoming a really big issue around the world. And obviously there's a lot of different ways that people have been trying to aid loneliness and try to help people become more social or engage in more pro-social activities. And I found this really interesting research article by this guy named Priest and a bunch of his colleagues. And they talk about the role of emotional regulation in loneliness. Okay. And emotional regulation is just a very fancy way of saying how someone processes their feelings and also how they self-soothe. And pretty much what these people found was that the people that reported being more lonely had more, like, less optimal tools to emotionally regulate themselves. So they reported having more acts of rumination, a lot more self-blame and blaming of others, suppression of their emotions, and regulate their emotions through rejection and withdrawal from social support. Whereas they didn't use a lot of something called cognitive reappraisal strategies. Again, a very fancy way of saying reframing your negative emotions into either positive ones or neutral ones. And helpful thought reframing, which is a similar tactic, but it's for thoughts rather than emotions. And the reason why this is interesting and this was a really important finding was because we kind of have this tangible idea of how lonely people are acting and treating their own emotions and the people around them that could inevitably make them more, in this term, chronically lonely. And what I found really interesting about this article was that we have this idea that we're using negative emotional regulation tools, but lonely people are also rejecting social support, even though in a lot of these people, they want it. And so this article was kind of this starting research of how we can kind of intervene into people's like lonely lives, I guess is the best way to put it, and how we can teach people not how to be more social, but learning how to better emotionally regulate ourselves, how to reframe our ideas of what social support looks like. Because it feels, at least from reading this, that once you start getting lonely, it can be a really fast and negative kind of like rolling down the hill of like, I'm feeling really lonely and I'm really blaming myself for not going out and talking to anyone. And then, and now there's people who may be wanting to reach out, but now I just, now I feel like I'm
just leave me by alone.
Now just leave me alone, even though I want social support.
Oh, that's really sad.
I know.
But I totally understand how that process can happen. It's just like you are in a deep, dark place. And it's so hard to see the light that even when you kind of do, you're like, I don't even know if I want to see the light anymore. Like, I'm just here in my sadness and my loneliness.
It's a little bit like a negative self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think, you know, to anyone that's listening to this, I think that the reason why these types of research are so important is so that we know that this is a pattern. So the good thing is that it's not just like an individual thing. It's not that a few people in the world are doing this. This seems to be how loneliness works. And we don't really know why, and we don't really know how all the time, but we have some idea of how loneliness is manifesting some people's minds. And because we know that, we can at least find ways to help people with better emotional regulation, better tools, learning how to stop suppressing feelings, and all that more helpful and fun stuff. But I did find it really fascinating and in a way kind of helpful to myself to, I don't know, a little bit of a nice realization that I've definitely felt these things before and I've been really lonely and then I've wanted to reject all social interaction or all social support. And it feels good to at least know that, again, I'm not the only one.
I think it's easy to feel bitter in those situations when you feel like society or community is rejecting you. You kind of want to reject them right back. Well, thank you for that research, Holly. That was really sad, but also really important. We're going to take a quick break to listen to some ads. And when we come back, we'll be speaking about third spaces with our special guest for this week, Abril Rivera. And we're really excited to do
that. So excited. Woo!
All right. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it raw. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay. Okay. Wait. Hold on. Does this make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we... You're not even going to last. All right. Victoria's Pretty Good, Not Bad Festival, Fountain, just back from France, Montreal... What the f***?
It's a script. I couldn't even... What?
Victoria's Pretty Good, Not Bad Festival, Fountain, just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a fucking elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR production department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
We're back. You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. We're joined by a special guest this week, Abril Rivera. Abril is the host of her own podcast at CITR called Love in Public. But today, she's here to tell us about her relationship with loneliness and the idea of third spaces. Welcome, Abril.
I'm so happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you.
And I'm a super fan of this podcast.
Should have been included in the intro.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that's a defining feature.
We're very happy that you're joining us to discuss this extremely sad topic, unfortunately. But we're excited to listen to the things that you have to say. So we're talking about this idea of loneliness and being alone. And I think we and the listeners at home would love to know your relationship to these two ideas.
It's so interesting for me to hear your opinions on being alone because I am someone who used to hate spending time alone.
Mm.
I grew up in a vibrant, warm Latin American household where home was synonymous with being a space for social gathering. And it was very much a culture where having an unannounced guest over was a good thing. So I think for years and years, I had an unhealthy relationship with being alone because if I wasn't surrounded by others, that felt like a bad thing.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I came to university where I met people who really treasured having time alone and who used it to recharge and to get to know themselves better that I started changing my mind about it.
Mm.
And now I think that I really value it and I notice a peace that comes from being alone and having situations where you don't feel the pressure to perform socially or to be in tune with the needs and desires of others. You're in charge of your own itinerary.
Mm.
And I remember a friend of mine telling me a while ago, just on the topic of being alone versus loneliness, that no one really tells you how busy it feels to be lonely.
Mm.
And what does that mean?
Yeah, I was thinking about that in preparation for today's conversation because to me, when you are alone, it feels like rest. And when you are lonely, it's a little bit of the panic, the FOMO. I don't feel comfortable in my own body. I don't feel comfortable in my own solitude.
True.
And it can be hard to get to that point, but we've all felt that loneliness.
Do you feel like kind of coming from the background that you've come from and arriving where you are today, do you feel like you've fully embraced the positive side of being alone, or is that something you're still struggling with?
Ooh, I would definitely say it's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you see that manifesting for you?
Ooh, I think that there are days where I spend time alone and being in my own company is so much better than being in bad company. Or there are days where I feel a lot more comfortable canceling plans because I haven't spent time by myself in a while. And then there are other days where I just want to fill every hour to the brim with the company of others because I am an extrovert like Halle. And that really does fill my cup.
Yeah. Nice. You spoke to both of us a bit about third space theory, which was new for me when you brought it up. Could you explain to the listeners what exactly that means and how that may affect loneliness or being alone?
Third space theory is this concept that was developed by a sociologist named Ray Oldenburg. And it is the premise that there are three different spaces that exist. The first space is home, and then the second is work or school. But he argues that there's the existence of this third space, an in-between space, which he calls the third space, where it encompasses any public space like a park, a cafe, libraries, beaches, and gyms, and how important these spaces are both for building community and also as just a place where you can create this balance for yourself between work and home. When I was reading up on it, somebody even called it the living room for society, which I thought was really interesting.
I like that.
Yeah, uh-huh. And within urban planning, a lot of people have been advocating for us to expand and to build more of these third spaces because they can help reduce feelings of isolation and create, and we can socially engineer spaces for connection, especially in a city like Vancouver, where you see a lot of this unintentional segregation that occurs, or in psychology we'll call that the homophily effect, where people tend to stick to what they know and people and communities that they know. I also feel like third spaces can be really connective on a deeper level, where you can find yourself in the same environment as someone that you wouldn't come across, whether that's because they're of a different age or gender, sex, or socioeconomic background, and that can be really important. But for me personally, I find that third spaces are my favorite environments to be alone.
Does that kind of help with like the transition of thinking about being alone as being a bad thing and then trying to kind of like process that and change it into being a good thing for you?
Yeah, I think on the spectrum of being in solitary, I mean not solitary confinement, but truly being in solitude and being in a crowd of people, third spaces feel like a happy medium where you are in your own company. You don't have to directly engage with others. You don't have to participate in the conventional way, and yet you're still a fly on the wall. You still get to observe all these social interactions.
I was just going to say that makes a lot of sense for you as an extrovert to want to be surrounded by, like, even Halle has talked to me about wanting to study in a space where people are doing things around her.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that I feel like I really, when I'm by myself, I'm never, I don't like spending time by myself in like a room or
I'm
in my home. I like to go out. And I was going to ask you, for when you find yourself in these third spaces, do you interact with the people around you, or do you just stay by yourself? Like, are you going to cafes and then maybe talking to those people, or is it more of like a, you are in this space with lots of energy and people, but you are staying by yourself?
Not necessarily. Yeah, I don't feel like I feel that need to interact with others. I love people watching. I love the eavesdropping. I feel really creatively inspired. I feel connected both to myself and others because I am noticing moment to moment, oh, that parent just treated their child in a certain way and it made me uncomfy. Or, wow, that was a really affirming and the kind of interaction that buoyed me up. And it makes me, it feels a little bit like journaling, in that you're reflective about what kinds of behaviors you enjoy and what, like, kind of will incite a response in your own body, but you have the stimuli of other people around you, as opposed to just being stuck with your own thoughts at home.
Yeah, and I think that these third spaces like represent this in like in between of private and public space so well, because you're able to witness these moments, let's say between like a parent and child, that would otherwise probably be pretty private. Like I was just thinking about like airports in terms of this, where you see families, you know, traveling together and they're frustrated and they're trying to get everything together, and you see them get into these huge fights, let's say. And I feel like that's something that you wouldn't otherwise be able to witness. So it's kind of like weird and liminal in that way.
Oh, liminal is a great word. And I love that you used airports, because I think that whenever I'm traveling on my own for whatever reason and I'm witnessing all of this conflict and clumsiness and awkwardness, which will come up naturally because we're human beings and we can't agree on everything, I just have a sense of relief of, oh, I'm on my own. I'm on my own schedule. Yeah. I don't have to conform to what anyone else wants in this moment.
I also think, when going back to what you were saying about how in a lot of city and urban planning, third spaces are kind of getting talked about more, because I think that's a big conversation people are having about when people leave university, they feel so much more lonely. And then we talk about, what is a university give you? You are in a space with people who are somewhat like-minded, maybe somewhat similar in age, but you have all this, you know, look at UBC. I'm literally looking at a spot where I have sat and ran into all my friends, made new friends. There's spaces for people to go and sit and be by themselves, but also mm-hmm. be surrounded by the people around them. And it's a space where people are actively going to be at all times. And it is somewhat scary, at least for me, for graduating, that I'm going to be leaving this space. And now I'm entering into a city that's, you know, I would say that Vancouver has some infrastructure for that, but mm-hmm. obviously not the same as a university campus. And that was when you were talking about this theory, that was the first thing that came to my mind, was university campuses and what they bring young people. Even when you look at study spaces, everyone's there doing the same thing. Yeah. No one's really talking. But you're all there kind of connected by the fact that you're all in this space, you all go to the same school, and you're all there to work in some way. And so I find that interesting, and I do really hope that it's considered in a lot of city and urban planning, because I think that the way that a lot of university campuses are built are really conducive to meeting new people and feeling like you're a part of something, even though at other times they can feel very isolating as well. But in this context, I think it really makes sense that they are trying to uplift a social space.
Mm. Yeah, I think this might be like a slightly different take on these third spaces. And I think it is influenced by what we were talking about earlier in terms of introversion versus extroversion. And I want to take this opportunity to ask two self-identified extroverts. Because I know you talked about your relationship with third spaces and how, you know, that helps you to not feel totally lonely in the way that you might if you chose to spend that time like alone in your room or something like that. But I feel like I've had kind of opposite experiences in third spaces sometimes, where like, let's say I go to a cafe because I have nothing else to do that day, or maybe I'm in a new place. So I'm like, okay, let me just like go to this coffee shop and, you know, do some work or whatever.
Yeah.
But, or let's say like if I went to a bar by myself.
There's a lot of scenarios.
There could be a lot of different situations. But I feel like me being there alone and being surrounded by other people, some of which may be alone, others may be like going out with other people, I feel like I sometimes find myself getting fixated on the fact of like, I'm here alone, but all these other people are here. I could be connecting with them, but I'm not. I'm not even sure if I really want to. And they all seem to have a purpose for being there. And I kind of get in my head about being like, what's my purpose for being here?
I think that's totally natural. Yeah. And I think we'd be remiss if we said that we didn't ever feel that way at all. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was younger feeling like, oh, I need to have a book with me or my mm-hmm. phone to pull out. Because what if people really do think I'm here alone and have no purpose for being yeah. here? And the interesting thing is, when I see people alone in public, I waitress, and whenever I see people come in and they've got their headphones and they're eating their food or they're reading a book, I think, wow, what must it be like to have that kind of security in yourself to go to a public space on your own and not be worried about how you're being perceived?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I didn't say this earlier on in the episode because I didn't think we had time, but talking about third spaces, I remember one of the places that I would feel the loneliest in were liquor stores.
Mm.
Because I remember when I was in a time in my life where I didn't feel connected to people, even though I had friends, or even I wasn't going to a liquor store for just myself. So I was going to get alcohol to drink with other people, but I wasn't fulfilled by my relationships. Mm. And I remember I would dread going to BCL because I would feel like everyone else is doing something that's so much more fun, and mm-hmm. I'm not doing that, and I'm not doing anything interesting tonight.
Right.
And I think inevitably it would make me feel more lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the connection I have to third spaces isn't so much, I think in some ways it's connected to, you know, extroversion and having, you know, a desire to be around people. But I also think it's really dependent on where I'm feeling in terms of, am I lonely or am I not?
Mm.
And am I in a place where I do just want to be by myself, but being by myself means that I still want to be surrounded by people? And that's the time when third spaces really play in, because like I said, I don't really want to go to my room. But then if I'm in a spot where I feel really lonely and I go to a place, specifically a bar or a cafe, mm-hmm. place where people frequent together, I think that would make me feel a lot more lonely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like it's, I think that's what it's dependent on for me.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a way to foster more connection within those spaces? Or do you think it's just dependent on the individuals that are there?
I would hope that there are ways to make spaces feel more open and warm to individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are spaces that I've entered before that have felt really like mm-hmm. connective and yeah. that I belong there. But I'm not really sure if it was because of me or if it was because of something else.
Right.
I also think that it's a shift in culture as well. I think that there are differences in how different cultures will treat public spaces. So mm-hmm. if you walk into a cafe and everyone's on their laptop working, mm-hmm. it's not really going to be an inviting atmosphere. But if you had a cafe where, I don't know, people were, you know, in Fleabag when they have like the Talking Tuesdays or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Like something like that. And I think that it does feel a little silly, but I think those types of things would work where it's mm-hmm. something by the institution or like the space where yeah. they're like, now talk.
Mm-hmm. Time to talk to the city of Vancouver.
Yes.
Oh, I would love that.
I would love it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this week, Abril. It was a pleasure to have you on, to have you talk about your relationship with loneliness and give a bit of a different perspective and talk about third spaces. Abril and I have done some journaling sessions before, and I can definitely attest to the fact that she definitely enters third spaces with keen ears and, aww. You know, is a great people watcher and brings those observations and really carries them with her and, you know, carries them about her day and, like, reflects on it and creates beautiful pieces of writing and journaling with
that
it, too.
That is so generous, so. Violet. And it's interesting that we've journaled together, and that, for me, is an activity that I mainly do in solitude, mm-hmm. and to be able to share that.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Helps me feel less lonely when I'm journaling, for sure. You can follow Abril's podcast on Instagram at loveinpublicpod, or stream her episodes on CITR's website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week, as always, we have a little bit of homework for you. And this one, now that I'm looking at it, is a little heavy, but you don't have to do the homework. I hope everyone knows that. But your homework for this week is to assess your own feelings of loneliness and the feeling of being alone. Are you lonely right now? And why may that be? And is there something you can do to help you feel less lonely? Maybe try reaching out to a friend to talk about what you're feeling, or try using a third space to make your own and facilitate a new way of feeling connected. And remember, it is incredibly normal to feel lonely. Almost all of us, and I will edit that to say everyone, has at one point felt lonely, and many of us are currently feeling that way.
This has been your free therapy session. We're your hosts. I'm Violet.
I'm Halle, and we're joined by
Abril. This has been your free therapy hour, because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it. We're still waiting to hear back from potential special guests for next week, so we'll leave next week's theme to be a bit of a mystery, but you'll just have to tune in next week to find out what it's going to be.
And that's our second to last episode of Therapy Hour, so True. You're really not going to want to miss it.
Kind of a big deal.
It's going to be really, really good and really cool.
I'm dreading the end, but so stoked for the next episode.
All right, we'll see y'all next week.
We love you.